Welcome into the Legion of Sports. I'm Chase Williams alongside Harrison Klein and Jake Anthony. We're getting ready for some March Madness, but there's a little bit of madness going around the country in general right now with the coronavirus. I want to talk to you guys just about how you have seen it and what your opinions are on how it's affecting sports so far.
Yeah, I think it's pretty crazy and just interesting to look at how just around the world, and I mean not just in America, how it's affecting sports. And by around the world, I mean in Italy, we've seen that. I'm pretty sure they just canceled all their sporting events entirely after initially just saying fans weren't allowed. Now they have no sports until at least April. And then we saw the news came out just today about the Ivy League tournament isn't going to be played, and that Yale is going to be the automatic bid because they won the regular season tournament or the regular season. And then, I mean, the joint press release from all four active leagues, the MLB, NHL, NBA, and MLS, all saying that media access is going to be restricted only to basically team personnel and essential team personnel outside of the players. And then when they do meet with the players, they have to be at least, I think, 6 to 8 feet away. So it's just crazy seeing all the impact that this virus is having across the world.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the world, but specifically for the sports, I mean, the four major sports, it's going to be really impactful for at least in the U.S. And then even in March Madness, I mean, you mentioned some of the conference tournaments have already begun getting canceled. The Ivy League's the only league to cancel it so far, but it'll be interesting to see if any other league takes that approach or any other conference takes that approach. And then with the March Madness bracket being located all across the country, it's going to be interesting to see these teams having to travel cross country, seeing if they will cooperate or if there's going to be some postponed play in March Madness or how they're going to handle that situation. It's going to be really interesting to look at.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's very interesting to look at from the whole like March Madness perspective. You mentioned the Ivy League already canceling their tournament, and that was a really big deal. I mean, Harvard is 2-0 against Yale this year and was expected, honestly, to win that tournament over Yale, even though Yale was the one seed. And many Harvard players went to social media to complain about this and how they didn't think it was fair. They all agreed, like, they understood why, like, this was a big deal, why they did that, but they didn't think it was the right steps. They think they should have played in a closed gym, no fans, something like that. They all agreed that they would be okay with that. And that just did not happen. Ivy League did not agree to that. They said, we're just canceling this tournament, which was a big deal. And then, of course, March Madness coming up. That's a big deal. Next week, there's the first four in Dayton. And then the first weekend, there's multiple games in Cleveland, Ohio. And the Ohio governor has said that he really does not want sporting events to have fans at them right now. Just play them in closed venues. And there's a lot going on. There's that going on. Then there's the Ohio State basketball playoffs this weekend. There's just a lot going on with this virus and how it's controlling. It's very interesting. I understand the concern, but at the same time, it doesn't like seem any worse than the flu. The flu's killed more people this year, has a higher fatality rate. So it's just very interesting to see the concern over this and how the leagues are like reacting to it. And I wonder if it's because of how the media has like pushed this virus since it is a new virus. But, you know, that's just our takes on it. I want to swing right into March Madness because it is coming up. And sadly, we won't have a podcast after the bracket comes out next week because we'll be on spring break. So I think we've all been kind of basing our thoughts off the most recent bracketology by Joe Lunardi that came out this morning. Well, yesterday morning, March 9th. It just in case you guys want to look at that as you guys are following along. But I want to know, where are some teams you could see that aren't like obvious contenders that you could see coming to the Elite Eight, Final Four, et cetera?
So mine is a team that we touched a little bit on last week, and it's going to be BYU out of the West Coast Conference. Right now they're 24-8, but I mean, I don't think their record really shows how good they are because for 10 games this year, they've missed Yoeli Childs, who's their best player. When he's played, they're 16-3 with wins over Gonzaga and St. Mary's. And just his ability to play down, he's a forward, I think 6'8", 6'9", puts up 22 points per game. He's a good defender and a good rebounder. And he also has that ability to stretch the floor and make threes. And that's what this team's all about, just shooting the three well. They're the best three-point shooting team in the country. They're number one percentage-wise. They're also good at shooting twos. They're the 14th best team in the country percentage-wise at two-pointers. They have the third most assists in the country and the 39th least turnovers. So, and 14 most points per game. So overall, this team offensively is tremendous. They have three other players, or they've three players outside of Childs that shoot over 40% from three, three others that shoot above 35% from three, and they have seven guys that average over 1 3-pointer made per game. And so, I mean, the biggest reason that I picked them is because last year we saw Auburn as a 5 seed, which BYU right now is projected to be about a 5 or 6 seed, depending where you look. And there's just a lot of similarities. Last year, Auburn was a great 3-point shooting team. They rode the hot hand all the way to the Final Four until they lost that game to Virginia. They had Bryce Brown, Jared Harper, two great shooting guards, and then Austin Wiley, a dominant big. And that's a similar situation here where you have TJ Hawes, Jake Toulson, and other talented guards, and then Childs down low. So just overall, very similar to Auburn, and that's the reason I picked them, because I think BYU may be a little better shooting team, a little worse defensively, but if they got hot from three, then there's not much that can stop this team until maybe the Elite Eight or Final Four.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this pick. Right now, they're 14th in the country, so they're obviously riding a high. They didn't perform too well last night when they played St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference tournament, but, I mean, everybody has an off game. Hopefully they got their off game out of the way before March. They beat Gonzaga, who's currently the number two team in the country, 91-78 earlier in the year, which just shows that they can play with anybody. Gonzaga is obviously a top team in the country, but I really like your point about the shooting. Obviously, in March, anybody can get hot. Anybody could win because it's only one game. But with this team, outside of Childs, almost all of them can shoot. There's a lot of spacing on that floor. It makes it a lot easier for those guys to drive to the lane if you're making shots and hitting them. But it's just going to be really interesting to see if they can withstand this shooting in the tournament. And if they can, then, I mean, I think they could beat anybody. I really like this pick.
I agree. I think it's a very good pick. I mean, they're looking at right around that 5 seed, 4 seed type area, which oftentimes you do see an upset in the first round. But I think if they can get past that and go on, get to the second game of the weekend, I think they'll be very good. TJ Hawes is really who I'm looking at on this team. Because last year when they didn't have Childs, he really was a leader, and he's taken a step back and really just been that second option for him, doing what they need him to do. And I think just because they have a player that can step up when they need to, but also can take that step back and let the star player do his thing when the time comes, I think just having that dynamic is really good and something helpful BYU has that not many other teams have in the nation.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because Hawes, like you said last year when Childs wasn't there, was a star. And I mean, if you have a guy like Hawes that can be a star and he's your second best player, that's phenomenal. Toulson, who scores even more than Hawes, is also a star. So they really have three stars on that team. Maybe the other two aren't at the level of Childs, but I mean, they're just so good offensively. I do have some concerns with them where, I mean, the biggest concern is that they're not very good defensively, especially inside the paint, where Childs is a big. But, I mean, if you have a team like Gonzaga, who they did beat, but if you have a team like Gonzaga where they have two or three dominant bigs who like to score in the paint, I think that's where their biggest issue is going to be. And then also, because their defense really isn't that good, if they get cold for even 8, 9, 10 minutes at one point, then that could potentially be it, because I don't know if their defense can hold up. But, I mean, I think the biggest thing with them is a team is probably going to have to score over 80 points to beat them in a tournament game, because this offense is so good and efficient consistently, and I just don't know how many teams can do that.
Yeah, I mean, the big part is actually something that I had concerns with as well. I mean, that's going to be their only problem come tournament time. If they run into a team that's just bigger than them, can score more consistently than them, only because, I mean, you live by the three and you die by the three. Yeah. So if they do potentially die by the three, then that could obviously be detrimental to them. But another thing with BYU is their top three scoring players and their top three leaders, Halls, Toulson, and Childs, are all three seniors. So that's normally a formula for success in March Madness. That's something that is, can't really go unstated. They've played together for 4 years now. They've obviously improved each year, and this is their best year yet. So it's going to be really interesting to see if this BYU team can finally put it together and make that deep tournament run that they had a few years ago.
I agree with everything that's been said. I think their biggest concern is size/athleticism. They're also not the most athletic team in the nation, and I think that's going to hurt them on defensively, as oftentimes you see them make some mistakes and get beat a little bit too easily from what I've watched this year of them. And so I think that could be a mistake. And you mentioned live by the three, die by the three. I mean, they lost in the semifinals 50-51. So they don't, when they don't shoot well, it's going to be hard for, I think it's hard for them to win those low scoring games. So they need to make sure they do get to that 80 points, because I think it will be hard, especially the deeper you get into the tournament, to beat a team that scores 80 unless you go into like triple overtime. But this team is set up great. I mean, you mentioned the experience. None of them have really played in the tournament, but their three best players are seniors, and that is important because they just have that chemistry they have. So BYU has a very good chance at going deep, and honestly could be one of those teams that nobody expects to make the Final Four, that I could think could even make it to the national championship this year, kind of like Loyola, but they're better than Loyola was a few years ago when they went on that Final Four run.
Yeah, that's a good point that both you make. Live by the three, die by the three. And I looked up this stat to see. So whenever they shoot under 35%, in six of their eight losses, they've shot under 35%. So, I mean, 35% solid from three, but if you're shooting under that for a team that shoots that many threes and that's where your offensive production comes from, that's a big issue. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to come down to if they can stay hot and make their threes like they've been doing all season, they can go far. But if they have a one-week game, then yeah, they're going to struggle.
Okay, so moving on to the next potential dark horse team for the March Madness tournament. My pick would be the Butler Bulldogs. They have some good quality wins this year. They beat Creighton, who is projected to be a 2 seed. They beat Villanova and Florida, who's projected to be a 9 seed. They lost a close game at Baylor. They lost by 2. Who is projected to be a number 2 seed right now. They have a few other close losses to Seton Hall, Villanova, Providence, Seton Hall again, and Creighton. Those are all Big East teams that tend to try to beat up on each other. I really like this team. They're similar to BYU in terms of experience. They have their two best players or best scorers. Kamar Baldwin and Sean McDermott are both seniors, very productive in shooting as well. They're both above, or Kamar Baldwin's actually lower in field goal percentage, but closer to 50% field goal percentage. They shoot 34% from three as a team, which is honestly their biggest struggle. They tend to go on spurts in their games where they can't make enough threes, but if they can figure out how to knock down the threes, I mean, they have three players shooting over 40% from three. So they have players capable of getting it done, but it's about the team itself. Kamar Baldwin is their leader and their best scorer. His heroics against Villanova and Xavier show that he's able to get it done when it really counts, and I think that he has finally come into his own. As a sophomore, he scored 24 points when they beat Arkansas 2 years ago, and now he's a senior. So it's going to be very interesting to see if him and Sean McDermott can take some of these younger guys that are sophomores and juniors and see if they can really compete. At a talent level, I would say they're close to some of these other teams that they're competing with, but they're not the most talented for a projected 4 or 5 seed. But I think they move the ball really well, and they get a lot of open shots. So it's about how they play more than who they actually play with. It's going to be really interesting to see if they play any of these Big East teams in the tournament. But their competition against Villanova, Baylor, Creighton, and Seton Hall just showed me that they can really compete with anybody. And as long as their shooting doesn't hurt them too much, then I think that they could really make a deep run to maybe the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight in March Madness.
The thing I think of when I think of Butler is their early 2010s heroics, where they almost beat Duke in the national championship. And ever since then, Butler has gone through a lot of changes. And obviously, those players long gone. Brad Stevens, now coach of the Celtics. But they've always been consistent. They're always a good team. I mean, I'm looking through their schedule, have not watched them or paid much attention to them this year. And they really only have one or two games where it looks like they did not have a chance at the end. They have some very good wins against some very good teams. And a lot, especially like before conference play, they played a lot of Power 5 teams that aren't necessarily tournament threats, but are teams that are Power 5 conference that are better than teams they could be playing, like they did at the beginning of the season with Ooey Pooey. And it's just very interesting because they beat every single one of those teams, and it looks like they not necessarily like destroyed them, but like had a comfort zone with it. They really only have one bad loss, and that DePaul loss. And really, the Big East was so competitive this year that even though DePaul only won a few games in the tournament, they did not fall under 500 until like the second to last week of conference play. So with as strong as the Big East is, Butler has handled themselves really well throughout the season. And because of that, they have that experience against those good teams like Villanova, like Seton Hall, like all these types of teams that, and Creighton, all these teams that are going to be threats in the tournament, and they've played them well or beat them this year. So I think there's a very good chance that Butler could be a team we see just have wreak some havoc in the tournament, especially on that second weekend.
Yeah, I like Butler a lot. This is one of the teams that I was considering when we did this. And I mean, I think one of the bigger reasons is that they're very experienced. Like you said, Jake, they have a lot of size, which helps them a lot. And they're battle tested. They're 10-6 against quadrant one teams. And I mean, Jake, you rattled off some of their biggest wins this year. They've beaten some good teams and some of them pretty convincingly. And I mean, on the defensive side, you look at that, that's probably their strength, especially on the interior with all that size they have. And then Kamar Baldwin is an absolute stud. We've seen time after time after time this year. I think he's hit three buzzer beaters to win the game this year. And you mentioned some of them earlier. And I think the biggest thing for them, so you mentioned, Jake, how they struggle from the three-point line, but they don't take many threes. A lot of their offense, they try and run an offense, and they take a lot of time off the shot clock because they try and get the best look possible down low. Then they don't settle for threes, which is the biggest thing for them. But then, for whatever reason, it seems like Kamar Baldwin, the last 5-10 minutes of game, just comes alive. And, I mean, he can take over. So I think their biggest weakness is if they potentially run into a team that really likes to shoot the three on a lot, because then, you know, Butler clearly struggles at guarding that. But, I mean, I think for the most part, this is definitely a team that has a pretty good chance at going at least Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and we're going to see them in the later part of the tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned their weakness could be facing a team that shoots the three and shoots the three well, and I completely agree. They've scored 80 points only twice this year, and that was early in the year against IUPUI and Wofford, who are not very good college basketball teams. So, yeah, scoring is definitely one of their weaknesses compared to the elite teams that they'll be facing later on in the tournament. But it'll also be really interesting to watch them during the Big East tournament. I mean, we've already mentioned some of these teams already, but they have some great competition in that tournament. If they can win two or three games and get to maybe the semifinals or the finals, then that'll battle test them some more and really get them that experience that and show them that they can compete with anybody, because I think they have the talent too. It's just about them being able to show up and produce at that level. You mentioned, Harrison, the quad one record. Did you say they were 10-6?
Yeah.
So they have four quads, quad one, two, three, and four. They have no losses against the quad three and four teams. So that means that the teams that they play that they're supposed to beat, they do. That doesn't mean much when it comes to the tournament, but the 10-6 record for the quad one does scare me a little bit. It shows that they can compete with those teams, but they're not winning consistently. That's obviously something only the elite teams can do. But it's going to be interesting to see how they match up against those elite teams.
You guys just mentioned the quad one and two wins. And I pointed out that their worst loss is DePaul. That was the bottom of the Big East. And that's still a quad two win. I mean, they definitely don't have any bad losses. My biggest concern is they have not beat a ranked team since the beginning of February, which is only a month right now. It was, I believe, Villanova. Yes, it was Villanova, just by 3 points. And they've played tight again since then. And they've lost some games against ranked opponents like Seton Hall and Creighton. But I think this tournament, as you mentioned, Jake, is really key. If they could pick up a win over another ranked team and just build some confidence going into the tournament, I think that'd be very important. Because some teams, they need that little confidence booster this week. And even if they don't win their conference tournament, that little boost of beating one of the better teams in it can be a very big deal and give them that confidence they need next week or 2 weeks down the road when March Madness is going on.
Yeah, I think that's a good point definitely to bring up, that they haven't beaten a ranked team in over a month, but they're getting hot at the right time. They've won their last three games, and maybe those haven't been the best teams in DePaul, St. John's, and Xavier. But, I mean, those are still good wins to have, good to pick up momentum on the way there. And then, Jake, you also mentioned how their 10-6 quad one record might not be the best, but, I mean, you look at other teams in the Big East, Nova 10-6 in quad one, Seton Hall 10-7. I mean, it's not the bottom of the barrel, but In terms of quad one wins in the country, only Kansas and Baylor have more than 10 in 11 and 12. So, I mean, they still have shown the ability to beat those teams. And I think that's the biggest thing, where they're getting these opportunities and they're taking advantage, unlike some other teams where maybe, like I'm looking right now, USC is 3-7 in quad one wins. So, I mean, I think that their ability to beat these quad one teams is definitely big. And especially these are rivalry games in the Big East, playing all these good quad one teams. And they've shown the ability that they can hang with anyone and beat most of them.
Yeah, I mean, it's just about being in that game to the finish. Chase mentioned earlier that they're in most of those games till the end, which is quite true. I mean, they don't have very many double-digit losses. A few here and there, but not consistently down the schedule by any means. But yeah, it's just about getting in that situation. And obviously, Kamar Baldwin will be their go-to in terms of finishing the game, but they're going to have somebody else to be able to knock down a big shot or make an extra pass or something of that measure, because the other team knows Kamar Baldwin's their best player, and they know that they're going to him for the final shot. So they're going to have to think about that somehow, because those games are going to be close. They're not going to have a runaway win by any means. And then another point is that they're 9-5 against the teams that are currently projected to be in the bracket, and all of those losses but one are on the road. So at home against those teams, they're 7-1. Which is pretty good. I mean, they're not going to have home games in the tournament, but it just shows that if they are in the right mindset and they're at home and they're playing their game how they want to play it, they could beat anybody in the country.
Yeah, and as you guys have said, Butler is a great team. And I was thinking about how I think it's very important to talk about how those losses recently have been on the road, and obviously March Madness is not on the road. I personally, my team kind of goes up against Butler earlier, it looks like, right now. I'm thinking Florida has a very good chance at rebounding themselves and going deep in this tournament. Early on in the year, Florida was a very highly hyped up team. They were one of two teams I think people thought could really give Kentucky a run for their money in the SEC. And that's a potential Sweet 16 matchup right there against Butler. And I'm not going to focus on that, but if you look at Florida's roster, they've been very underperforming. They have names like Scotty Lewis, Kerry Blackshaw Jr., and then right now their best player, especially on the offensive side, scoring, Keontae Johnson. These are guys that throughout the season just have not meshed as well, I think, as possible, and have not always performed to their expectations at the beginning of the year. And just this past week, they put up a very big fight against Kentucky. Actually, Kentucky had to have a massive comeback to pretty much come back and win that game last second. So even though Florida is sitting at that 9 line, I think they can do some damage. I mean, potentially they're looking at one seeds that could be Dayton, Gonzaga, and Baylor, or Kansas. And I'm going to leave Kansas out of this just because I think Kansas is probably the best team in the nation. But I think all three of those other one seeds are, most years would be known as a very underwhelming one seed with the teams they have. And while their records have deserved it and the way they've played just because of this season, I think Florida has a good chance at getting an upset in the second round and then using that momentum to get them even deeper. You've seen it before. They had a very underwhelming season where I think they were a 5 seed or a 6 seed this one of these past few years with Chris Chioza. But they were really hyped up because they were coming off, like, I think a Sweet 16 loss on a buzzer beater to Virginia. We're supposed to be like a top 10 team. And they just did not show up to expectations. And then the bracket came around and they destroyed. They went to the Elite Eight and almost made it to the Final Four. I'm expecting that to happen again, because just like Butler, throughout these past 10 or so years, Florida's always one of those teams that seems to compete when it matters most. And I think they're going to get a big win and probably make it to the SEC tournament championship. Maybe not win it, but I think they have a good chance at making it to the championship this weekend and getting that momentum we were talking about that Butler could use. I think they could also use it, and I think they will use it, and that will boost them into the second weekend and possibly even to the Final Four coming around early April.
I'm going to be honest. I don't really agree with this pick here. And, I mean, there's a few reasons for it, and I get where you're coming from with the talent, and, I mean, at some point it's got to come around, but they played 31 games this year, and they really, like you said, their chemistry is not there. They haven't meshed well together. For whatever reason, Mike White hasn't been able to figure it out in 31 games. And, I mean, you look at their stats, they just don't really do anything that well. They rank 148th in the country in points per game. Their field goal percentage is 70th. That's not bad. 3-point percentage is 101st. Defensively, they're not that good either. I mean, team's 144th best opponent 3-point shooting percentage, opponent field goal percentage, 129th they rank. So there's really not much that they do well on either side of the ball. And I get that they have talent, but it's just underwhelmed the entire year. And like you talked about that Kentucky game the other day, they did that without Ashton Hagans, and Emmanuel quickly didn't play the last 10 minutes of the game for
that
Kentucky.
Is very
so
true.
They basically let an undermanned Kentucky team come back from down 17. And yeah, they built that lead, but it just shows they're not a very good team if they're not able to handle that game comfortably at that point. So for me, I think maybe they could win one game just based on talent if they get a favorable matchup, but it wouldn't shock me if they don't win a single game in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, you guys both mentioned the talent. I mean, that's evident. They were supposed to be a really good, dominant team in the SEC, and it just hasn't accounted to anything yet. Chase mentioned their loss to Butler early in the year, and I'm looking through their schedule. They don't have necessarily any blatantly bad losses, but they have been competitive with some of the top teams. I mean, they only lost to Baylor by 11, and Chase mentioned the games against Kentucky. Obviously, their recent game against Kentucky was a little stained due to the injuries on Kentucky's side, but before that, they only lost to Kentucky by 6 points. So, I mean, it's just about that the group of talent coming together and being able to win one or two games in March. If I had to vote, if I was going to think that they were going to win a game in March, I would probably say no, only because they have underwhelmed all season. But I do see the potential here because they do have all that talent, and that's sometimes one of the scariest teams in March, only because they've been put down all season and the media's wrote them off and everybody's told them that they're not as good as they're supposed to be, but they are. They just haven't played together well.
I completely agree with that, and I do think I would not be shocked if I think they will definitely win the first game, but I think they're looking at a very tough top 10 team of the nation in that second round. And I think that's where you're going to hope, where I expect someone, likely Scotty Lewis, in my opinion. I was a big Scotty Lewis fan. I actually don't like Florida at all. I was very disappointed when he went there. And I think he's going to be the type of guy to step up this March and really lead them. And the key thing I like about it is because they don't really have any bad losses. They've competed with Kentucky twice, and they really fell apart to an undermanned Kentucky team. There's no way around that. But the other teams that are the quote-unquote top of the SEC, which is not as strong as the other Power 5 conferences, I'd actually put even the Big East as a stronger conference. They've competed and do have some wins over. And they have some bad losses, not necessarily like blown-out losses, but just games they should have won. And so there's a lot of concern, and it's a very risky pick on my part, but I think it's something they can do, especially because they're looking at a potential matchup in the second round of the SEC tournament against Mississippi State, and then they go on to play Kentucky in the quarterfinals, I mean the semifinals. And I just think the momentum's going to boost up. I think because they will have slightly more games, I mean, unless they blow a game early, and then I would totally give up on Florida in this SEC tournament. But I think there's a chance that they could go up against Kentucky and finally get over that home, because they played well in Rupp. They played well at home against Kentucky. And they're stepping up against the right teams, which makes me think they can do it in the tournament. It's just a question of whether they will.
I mean, I think I would argue that they do have some bad losses. They lost to Ole Miss. They lost to Tennessee, who are two of the worst teams in the SEC. They also lost to Mississippi State, who hasn't been that bad in the SEC, but they're a bubble team right now. So, I mean, if they can't beat these teams at home, I mean, Tennessee was on the road, but if they can't beat Mississippi State and Missouri at home, I just don't know if they can beat any of these good teams in March. Like, right now, Lenardi has them as a 9 seed playing St. Mary's, who's an 8, and obviously that's probably going to change, but that's the type of caliber team they're playing, and if they play to St. Mary's, who is unbelievable from 3-point, and that is one of Florida's biggest weaknesses, defending the 3, then I think they might just get run out of the building. I've watched some of their games, and I just don't feel like they're a good team at all, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Scotty Lewis. I just don't know if that's going to be the guy that's going to do it, only because he's so young. And I mean, as a freshman, he's got all the talent, but he's just not there yet mentally and emotionally to be able to bring his best at some of these high-pressure situations, at least in my opinion. I mean, hopefully for them that does happen. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking down their schedule right now, and there are a few few losses that are concerning. Obviously, every team plays a few games, plays a few off games, and it's nothing that is going to necessarily affect them in the tournament. But, I mean, their game against UConn is not very appealing. Utah State, even though they're going to have a bid in the tournament, is not necessarily a great team. But overall, I mean, like I said earlier, it's all about having this talent come together. It hasn't come together in 30 games, so I'm not too confident that it will in the tournament, but there's always that outside chance that it will be. And, I mean, they're one of those teams that has a puncher's chance, I mean, against any team they play because of that talent that they have on their roster. So it's just about how much of a puncher's chance they have, and, I mean, that really just depends on the matchup.
I agree. And the early season losses I haven't seen since really, I mean, they played really poorly at the beginning of the season. There's no argument about that. But since then, they've really only stepped down to that level once with that Ole Miss loss that you mentioned, which is the one loss I looked at and said, wow, that's bad. Because not only did they lose to Ole Miss, one of the worst teams in the SEC, but they got blown out by Ole Miss. And Tennessee is another one of those teams that isn't great. And personally, I watched that game. There were some mistakes made, and they are young. And Scotty Lewis did actually make a few mistakes in that game. But I think because of the raw talent he has, if he does step up, I think they're going to be a tough team to beat. And just with the way this season has gone, this is a team I thought was going to be very good at the beginning of the season. I thought they were going to be better than Kentucky. I thought they were going to run away with the SEC, and clearly that did not happen. And here I am putting blind faith in them again for what you guys clearly are saying is like not very good. And I agree with that. Like, they don't necessarily deserve to have my faith. I just have this gut feeling that Florida teams, they do step up in March, and I think we're going to see that happen once again here. But we want to move on now to the MLB season. We're in the middle of spring training, really starting to get ready for the season. And there's a lot of teams that kind of been towards the bottom for a while or looking to bounce back. And there's a few teams I think have a very good chance at becoming that next one of the next great teams and could do what the Nationals did this year, which is surprise everyone and win the World Series. I don't know if personally any of our teams are going to do that. I don't think mine will, but I'll let Harrison start with his team to watch out for this MLB season.
So my team is going to be the Chicago White Sox. So last year, pretty bad, 72-89 record, third in the AL Central in their division. But a lot of people are saying that they won the offseason with their additions, and some of them include signing Yasmani Grandal, who's coming off of a pretty good 28 home run, 77 RBI season, probably a consensus top five catcher in baseball. Traded for Nomar Mazara, who's a good right fielder, still only 24 years old. So just a lot of untapped potential there that, you know, who knows, maybe this year it'll come out. A big signing for them pitching was they signed Dallas Keuchel to a four-year deal. He's the best ground ball pitcher in the league, 61%, which is the best. He threw 112 innings and only 19 starts last year, and that was because he sat out for the first 2 months due to just wanting a contract. And then he also had a 3.75 ERA, which is pretty solid. And the thing is, they don't need him to be that top-of-the-rotation guy that he used to be in Houston in 2015 when he won the Cy Young. He just has to be the number two or number three for Lucas Giolito. And then they also signed Encarnacion from the Yankees, who is really good. Steve Cishek is a good reliever that they signed to add to that bullpen, which is probably one of their biggest weaknesses. And then another big move, they signed their top prospect, who's the number three prospect in baseball, Luis Robert, to a multi-year deal, basically saying that he's going to be there for opening day. And they also re-signed Jose Abreu to a three-year deal, which basically shows that they want him to mentor these young guys. This is a very young team that's looking to make a next step. And then just to wrap up everything that they did in the offseason, they have probably a top 10 lineup in baseball. Also, they have Tim Anderson there, Yoan Moncada, Eloy Jimenez, all three of those are all-star caliber players. You bring back Jose Abreu, and then you add Grandal and Robert. That's a very good lineup that I know I don't want to face in the postseason if they make it there. You have Giolito, who is still only 24 years old. He's the headline of that rotation. And then you have a few young pieces. Dylan Cease is another one. And then I just think competing in the division is very realistic because you have an Indians team that seems like it's transitioning into a rebuild and won't be as good after, you know, a pretty rough 2019. And then the Twins seemed to overachieve last year, so maybe they won't be as good. And I think that for them, competing in the AL Central is very realistic because they're going to have a dominant lineup and then a pretty good rotation that is only going to get better throughout the season.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned their division, and that's exactly where I was going to go. Looking at the Twins and the Indians, they're not bad teams by any means, but they're relatively around 500, at least their last year standings. And I mean, I would agree with you where the Indians, I definitely think, are going to take a step back, and it's just whether or not the Twins can keep up what they did last year. But yeah, I mean, I really like this team. They were under 500 last year, but with all the additions they made, I mean, you highlighted most of them. I mean, they spent a lot of money trying to upgrade this roster in terms of pitching and hitting. You mentioned their lineup, and I mean, it's a scary lineup, especially when they weren't this good last year. To be able to build that lineup in one offseason is pretty interesting for them to do. And then they have Michael Kopech, who just came back from Tommy John surgery. He clocked in at 100 miles an hour, so he should be fine. That's another addition. I mean, after that surgery, you never know how they're going to come back, but that's another good addition for them. But I'm really excited to see this team play. It's just about how it all comes together. But I mean, with that much talent, I don't see too much wrong.
I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I am from the Chicago area, and the hype on the White Sox right now is surprisingly high in the Illinois area, and people do believe in this team. And you guys both mentioned the division's kind of weak, and we talked about the Twins being kind of surprised coming up last year. I think they can definitely compete in this division. I don't know too much about their team, but I do know one of my best friends is a White Sox fan, and he is hyped about this season. He believes they have a very good chance at not just winning the division, but causing some problems in the playoffs. So from everything I can tell, while I don't know truly by looking at the roster and looking at everything how good they could be, I do understand that everything is screaming that this White Sox team, for the first time in a long time, is really going in the right direction. So while I'm not going to sit here and point out stats and players I think are going to lead this team, I do have to say that everything from a pretty general baseball fans, not even, like, I would almost put myself under a general baseball fan's perspective, this team does look like they're going in the right direction.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think, so I'm not totally sure if they're going to win the division this year, because as good as the Twins are, and even though they probably will regress a little bit, I think they were a 100-win team last year. I don't think that the White Sox will be able to keep up with them, but I think that they'll be in contention for a wild card until the last week of the season, maybe even take the second wild card. And I mean, the thing is that this is such a young team that it's not just this year that they're going to be good. This is a team that they're going to take a big step this year, probably win at least 85 games, 86 games. And then the next year after that, they are definitely going to be contenders, at least to make the postseason and maybe even in the World Series if they get in there. Because this is a young team that has a lot of future stars. They've had a top farm system for a while. And then, like you said, Jake Kopech, they got him in the Chris Sale trade. They got Moncada. So, I mean, Chase, you mentioned it, how this is a team that hasn't had a lot of hope in a while. They have a lot of hope right now for the future, and not this year, not just this year, but 4, 5, 6 years down the road. This is going to be a dangerous team.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what the White Sox do next year. So my team that I think is going to be the most improved next year is the Los Angeles Angels. The Angels already have the best player in baseball on their roster, so that helps, and Mike Trout. They just added World Series champion Anthony Rendon to a 7-year, $245 million deal. They increased their pitching talent with additions of pitchers such as Julio Teherán and Dylan Bundy. Those aren't, like, you would say elite pitchers, but they're definitely going to help the rotation. They already have Ohtani, who was the 2018 Rookie of the Year. He's a two-way hitter and pitcher. He's very productive at both of those positions. What I'm really excited about is their 2, 3, 4 spots of their lineup. I mean, it could potentially be Trout, Rendon, Ohtani, and Justin Upton if he is finally healthy. He's been injured for the past season and a half, not really productive recently because of those injuries. But if they can get him healthy and keep the rest of that lineup healthy, I think that 2, 3, 4, 5 spots could really be potent and dangerous for potential pitchers. They also have Albert Pujols still on the roster. Obviously, he's 40 years old, so he's not going to do as much. But as a veteran player, he could bring some leadership or even some production on that team. But along with that, Joe Maddon, their new manager, is a really good manager, obviously. but it's just about putting it all together. And I mean, for a while they only had Mike Trout and that's it. So it's going to be fun for them to have talent around him and talent to compete, similar to the White Sox, where I don't think they're necessarily going to win their division or earn a playoff spot. But I definitely think they're going to improve. They were 72-90 last year. I think they'll have an above 500 record, definitely, as long as these guys can stay healthy. So I'm looking for the Angels to improve, probably jump to 2 or 3 in their division, with the Astros probably taking a step back now that they don't know what pitch is coming. And the other teams in their division just aren't necessarily elite teams. The Athletics won almost 100 games. So they're going to be decent competition for the Angels. But outside of that, their division isn't too strong. So that's why I'm excited for the Angels.
I like this pick a lot. It's one of the teams I was looking at personally. I searched up pretty much just MLB, like, teams to watch this year. And there was an article about the teams are either going to be very, very good or very, very bad this year and could not live up to the hype that they're getting. And all three of our teams are actually on it. And the worst case scenario for the Angels is they play the same as last year, pretty much. I mean, 72-90, not a great record. So there's really not much for them to go down, especially with the talent they have. And I think you mentioned bringing in Joe Maddon. I think that's a really big deal because that is a very respected manager. And if I know how respected he is, then clearly he's doing something right in the MLB. And I think with the additions you talked about and the fact that they still do have Albert Pujols, which he's nowhere near what he was when he was great with St. Louis. But like just having the veteran leadership, the young prospects, and as you mentioned, the best player in baseball, Mike Trout. I think just everything's coming together for them for the first time in a long time, which is why I agree. I don't think they're going to win the division, but I think they're going to compete. I mean, yes, the Astros will have a tight eye on them, but they're still one of the most talented teams in baseball, and I expect them to show that this year. You mentioned how well the Athletics played. I think they will maybe take a slight step back from what I understand, but not much of one. So I think even if they don't make the postseason, we're going to see a very competitive Angels team for the first time in a long time that these fans have been expecting with the best player in baseball on the roster.
Yeah, I like this pick a lot as well. And I mean, clearly the additions of Anthony Rendon, who just led the Nationals to a World Series, is the big headliner. But I mean, you look at Mike Trout, he's never had this much talent surrounding him in a lineup. And just, I mean, imagine how scary he's been. He's won 3 MVPs. He's finished second, I think, 3 times. He's on pace to be one of, if not the greatest player of all time. And now he has Shohei Ohtani and Anthony Rendon surrounding him. They still have Andrelton Simmons, who's one of the best shortstops defensively in the game. Still improving his offense, but that'll be good. And then Joe Adell, who I think is the number 6 ranked prospect in the MLB right now. He's supposed to come up pretty early in the season this year, probably sometime in late April. And so, I mean, that's another addition. You have him and Trout in the outfield together. The thing is, the pitching staff is just so bad. And you highlighted some of it, too, where, yeah, they signed Julio Teheran and Dylan Bundy, but they're both terrible. Like, I'm going to be honest. They're really just not good. And, they tried to get Gerrit Cole. Luckily for me as a Yankees fan, they didn't. He went to the Yankees. And I just think behind Ohtani, who even he is probably a question mark as a pitcher, coming off Tommy John, we still don't know 100% what he's going to be like. But, I mean, just behind him in general, Teheran, Andrew Heaney, Griffin Canning, and then Bundy and Teheran, just really not a good rotation. And then the bullpen is also a mess. So, yeah, I mean, I agree. Where I think they're probably going to be somewhere in the 80 win mark, 80 to 85 wins is probably where I'd put them. I don't know if they'll necessarily compete for the playoffs because I just think that rotation is really so poor for them to be able to do that. But they're definitely going to take a big jump this year.
Yeah, I mean, you highlighted the starting pitching, and I had just written down to mention the rotational pitching. So clearly their pitching is still a question mark. They're going to have to address that in the coming off seasons. But they do what I found interesting is they have the 5th most spending of any 25-man roster in the MLB. So not only do I think they are going to improve, but they really need to improve in terms of the front office and people keeping their jobs, because they spent a lot of money on this roster. And even though there are some young guys in there that could potentially help them in the future, it's kind of important for them to make a step to improve now, especially since they do have Mike Trout. I mean, you mentioned there hasn't really been any talent around him, and that's completely true. It's just about It's just been him the past few years. But it's going to be interesting to see if John Madden can round out this team and kind of put all these pieces together. I'm really worried about their pitching, as Harrison just highlighted. They're really just not very good, bottom half of the league in pitching. And the second half of their starting lineup, there's some holes in there. But I feel like the strength in their first half of their lineup can get them, like Harrison said, 80 to 85 wins. But I'm just excited to see this team take a little bit of a step forward. And then I feel like if they get some help in terms of pitching and maybe another position player in the next offseason or two, then they can really compete for a championship in the coming years.
You know, we talked about the one downside of the Angels being the pitching for them. The reason I picked my team was it's the Toronto Blue Jays. And what I believe one of their best parts of them is that while their pitching doesn't seem to be like overly great or anything, they do have the number one prospect with Nate Pearson. Yeah, Nate Pearson, the righty. And they have a lot of young guys in that rotation. And I think that'll lead to lots of, like, maybe lots of losses early on in the year, but they're going to get lots of guys some experience in the big leagues and on the mounds. And I think that's key. And so they look like they have a decent rotation. While it probably won't be great this year, you might not see this team have a great pitching experience this year, I think they're set up for the future very well, especially with the club's number one prospect in Pearson. Everyone's saying he'll come up pretty early in the year, and it seems like there's a lot of hype around them. And then, of course, they have some big names like Vladimir Guerrero, I believe.
Guerrero.
And that's a name I know. And in baseball, if I know the name, then that's a pretty big deal. And they have them. They also mentioned Bo Bichetti and Kevin Biggio. And just, it sounds like they have a lot of young talent with big bats as well. So granted, I'm not sure this season you'll see them, especially in the American League East with the Yankees, which I think are, they're easily a top two team in baseball. You could argue maybe the Dodgers are better than them, maybe not. And then the Rays have been pretty good, but they also have the Red Sox, which I feel like won't be good at all this year. And then, of course, Baltimore, which has not been good for a while, and I think that will continue. I mean, they mentioned you have 19 games a year against your divisional opponents, and you should go 19-0 against the Baltimore Orioles. And while that's not likely to actually happen, they have one of the easier schedules. There's a lot that I think they could compete if everything goes right. And I think you're going to see a big boost, because this was another one of those teams where MLB.com, as I was reading about them, pretty much said it really can't get much worse. So I think you're going to see a big step, and whether that step's the playoffs, maybe not, but they're starting to piece together a team that will make Toronto excited again, like they were in the early to mid 2010s with the teams they had winning the American League East.
Yeah, I like this pick a lot. This is one of the teams I was considering also, and you highlighted it. That their young position players and hitters are absolute studs. Vlad Guerrero Jr. is going to be an all-star probably within the next year or two. Biggio's good. Bichette's good. They also have Lourdes Gurriel Jr., who his brother is Yuli Gurriel on the Astros, so he's good. He's only 23. All these guys are so young. The only issue with them is their pitching, and it's similar to the Angels, but like you said, they did get Ryu from the Dodgers. The only problem with him is durability concerns, where he has had injuries in the past. And, I mean, hopefully this year he's able to figure that out. But after him, Chase Anderson, Tanner Roark, really not guys that are going to move the needle all that much. So, I mean, I think they're similar to the Angels, where their rotation is going to be an issue. And then their bullpen's decent. They have Ken Giles, but I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they make a big trade, where they either trade for someone like David Price has been rumored. That, I mean, the Dodgers aren't going to want his contract. He's just not a good enough pitcher for what he's getting paid. Maybe the Blue Jays are going to want to take, you know, if they're maybe competing for a wild card this year, maybe they'll take a flyer on him, give some, I don't know what the Dodgers would want, but give him something. But, I mean, basically, I think this is a team that is definitely going to take a jump. Probably 80 to 85 wins is where they'll be, but it's going to be a team that, as a Yankee fan, I'm not happy that these guys are in the division. This is going to be a good team in the future, because they have very good building pieces in all these young hitters that they brought up last year and are only going to get better as they get older.
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays were one of the teams that I had considered as well, but I just saw them as too young. And, I mean, if we're doing this a year from now, I think they're the team. They just need some time. We mentioned that some of their young guys that they have in their building already, meaning that they're probably not going to contend in 2020. But they're definitely on the rise, and I like this pick a lot because not only are they going to be a fun team to watch, but they're going to be they're young and they can build this together. So all these young pieces that are coming together, it's better to do it a few years too early than a few years too late. So if they can build this in the next 3 or 4 years, then they could be serious contenders. Harrison kind of highlighted the pitcher struggles, which is obviously a factor, but I mean the fact that they're a few years away gives them time to get either a big name free agent or some other guys out of their farm system to really improve that team. So I like this team a lot. I think they're going to take a step forward from last year, definitely. It's just about how much and how much is going to come out this year and how much is going to wait for the next few years.
I think this team, as you guys mentioned, the rotation's not very good. I think this team's definitely going to be a team that struggles early on in the year because of the rotation. And while I do think their offense could possibly keep them in some games and win them some games by just going off, I don't expect it to be enough to make them a true legitimate postseason threat. But I think because they do have to go up a team against like the Yankees so often, and while losing those games is tough, and I don't expect them to have a great record against the Yankees, it's experience. Going up against some of the best pitchers, playing against just some of the best players in baseball in general, is going to help you in the long run. And I love the idea, not necessarily of David Price, but like them making a move midseason for a pitcher, especially if they're still in that race. And I think they will be. And I'm worried they might be the type of team to fall apart come around September and just lose any chance at making the playoffs. But this team definitely does have the cornerstones. And I think they have a good enough field system where they can also make a trade and give up some prospects and not really give up on their future to get a little bit now. But they and could lead them to the playoffs is pretty much what I'm trying to say. And I don't expect that. I agree with your 80 to 85 types of win range, maybe a little bit higher if they play really well. And I think the key thing is I almost hope they struggle early, especially pitching wise. So they bring up that number one prospect they have and give him some experience, because I mean, that's the only way they're going to really get better, is because yeah, he might struggle at first, but you need that experience. And he seems like a real deal from all the research I did. Every single website brought up him and Vlad, and those were the only two that, not the only two I saw consistently, but the two that they really wanted to highlight. So I think while this team, as Jake said, is probably still 1 year away from really truly being a postseason threat, I think this is the type of team that could get Toronto excited. And a city like that, they will come watch their teams when they see that there's a lot to happen in the future with the prospects they have now.
Yeah, I mean, that last point you mentioned where fans are going to come out. This is a team that, I forget what the streak was, but they had a very long streak of consecutive sellouts. And you look at some of their bigger postseason moments, whether it's the Bautista bat flip or the Encarnacion walk-off in the wild card game, there's fans there, and they're loud. They have one of the best fan bases in the country, but I mean, they're showing right now they're disappointed. And I think the biggest thing for them to compete in the future is they have so many guys on that are getting paid the league minimum right now. You have Vlad, you have Bichette, Biggio, Gurriel, all these guys getting paid nothing. Next season, they're going to have to go out and find another star pitcher like Ryu's caliber that you can sign to you know, make this rotation better, because that is going to be the bigger issue. Hitting won't be an issue for this team in a year or two. It'll be the pitching. And if they want to really compete, they're going to have to, you know, bring in more pitching. And so that'll be the biggest thing for them, because I don't know about their farm system with pitching, but I really don't think it's that good. So, yeah, I mean, overall, this is going to be a good team next year, but in the future, this is going to be a great team once they get better pitching.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the players on league minimum deals, and that's going to be really interesting to watch, not just this year, but their production in the next year or two, because they're going to have to get paid eventually. And if they produce this year and the next year, then they're going to have to get paid, and that's going to potentially tear the team apart. So it's going to be important for them to get those good pitchers in the building sooner than later, so that they have those young guys still on their roster, or at least as many of them as they can keep and pay. But it's going to be very interesting to see how they compete, and I'm really excited for the Blue Jays this year.
Yeah, both the Blue Jays and the Angels seem to be in very similar spots. Maybe, I mean, at least on the pitching side, and where that's where they need the help. And I think that's why both of these teams is interesting, and see what they can do to build around that during the season, especially with how great their offenses could be this season. It'll be something fun to watch, but we'll be back at it 2 weeks from now, I believe. Yeah, next week is spring break. Hopefully 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
we'll see what happens, see if we're at school, as I just saw another school canceling 2 weeks after spring break. So hopefully we'll be back with some March Madness mayhem. But thank you guys for listening. We'll see you soon.